From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It is a special honor to be here for the commemoration of the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. We must trust women, all women, to make decisions about our own bodies. And it is critical that women have the right and the ability to choose what is best for them and their health.
I am so thrilled to finally be here as Governor Pritzker commits Illinois to join the U.S. Climate Alliance.
It requires our Department of Human Services to conduct a full review of appropriations that have been made in this year and prior years to make sure that that money is being spent and spent wisely, and making sure that the welcoming centers are well represented and offering the services that they should.
Good afternoon. The federal government has been shut down now for more than 1 month. In Illinois, thousands of families have gone without pay, some of them even while showing up to work. Today, the governor and I joined forces to announce an innovative loan program to help middle-class families impacted by the government shutdown.
Well, the state taking a step to help federal workers who are missing paychecks because of that partial federal shutdown. Also this week, Governor J.B. Pritzker issuing more executive orders. The topics included climate, reproductive rights, immigration. We'll talk about those. And there's been another Veterans Home resident who has died after testing positive for Legionnaire's disease, this time at the Mantino Veterans Home. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also in our State House studio, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House Editor, Daisy Contreras, the IPR State House Reporter, and our guest this week is John O'Connor with the Associated Press. John, good to have you on once again.
My pleasure, Sean.
We mentioned federal workers, and before we get around to that, I wanted to touch base on something that's going on with some state workers, primarily the AFSCME union and its members. J.B. Pritzker's administration went to court this week. John, you covered that. What is going on there? What's the status of AFSCME and trying to get a new contract with the state?
The new Democratic governor, J.B. Pritzker, asked the Supreme Court for more time to allow him to decide whether to appeal an appellate court decision that probably will never be appealed. It was a case brought by his predecessor, Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, 2 years ago. The AFSCME union, which represents most of the state employees, a good number of them, 38,000, has been without a contract for 4 years now, since July of 2015. In January of 2017, Governor Rauner's team walked away from the bargaining table saying that they're at an impasse. This is an inextricable stalemate, a legal term for we can't go any further, which would allow the administration to impose its last best offer, so it could impose its terms, and the union could strike if it wanted to. AFSCME voted to strike, voted to approve a strike. They have not gone on strike, but they voted to approve a strike for the first time in their four-year history. The case on impasse went to the State Labor Board, which agreed that it was an impasse, but the 4th District Appellate Court in LaSalle County overturned that and said, no, go back, keep talking. Governor Rauner sought an appeal, sought an extension on the deadline to appeal to the Supreme Court, and that deadline was expired yesterday. Governor Pritzker asked for an additional deadline for 90 days, but his team says it's probably likely that we're not going to appeal that decision. We're going to let the appellate court decision stand that we're not at impasse, because Pritzker's priority is to go back to with AFSCME to start bargaining again and get past this idea that that there is an impasse.
So if that is the priority, John, what's the point of this asking for this extra time?
Simply, as it was explained to me, just to because the governor was just inaugurated 10 days ago, a little more than, to allow his legal team to look at all the options, make sure it's crossing its T's and dotting its I's, and frankly, I'm sure, to give more time to talk, continue talking with Ask Me to make sure everybody's on the same page. You know, I guess you don't want to drop one of your options before you know that it's, you know, that things are kosher.
And nothing would stop them from having bargaining sessions. Maybe they've even started doing that. I don't know. But nothing stops them from doing that while this legal wrangling is playing out,
sure.
Right?
Okay. Right. Correct.
Well, I mentioned...
Although I would mention that if the argument is whether or not there's an impasse, and the side that declares an impasse then goes back to the bargaining table, that kind of makes, is there an impasse, a moot question, right?
Right. So we'll continue to follow that, I think, as it goes along, and some complicated legal maneuvering taking place there, but AFSCME members right now still without a contract. I mentioned earlier that at the start of the show that federal workers could be getting some help from the state of Illinois, those who are missing their paychecks because of the government shutdown. And Daisy, you covered a news conference this week in which this program was laid out.
Yeah, so the state established a $100 million program to help banks and credit unions fund low-interest loans. So for workers that are looking for ways to pay their bills, this would be one way for them to do it. Several lenders doing business with the state have agreed to waive fees, defer payments, or offer 0% interest loans for the more than 8,000 federal employees living in Illinois.
It's not expected to cost the state money, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Only in the sense that we're going to be giving this money to the financial institutions almost for free. Normally, the state invests money in banks and gets a decent return. And what the governor and Treasurer Ferrix are saying is, we'll settle for less of a return, bank, credit union, if you will make very low interest or zero interest loans to these federal workers who are going without pay. It's similar to the programs that have been placed for, gosh, I don't know how many years, decades, that allow for low-interest loans to farmers, low-interest loans to college students, in other situations that state treasurers of both parties have been doing for many, many years. It's called a linked deposit plan.
In this case, it's coming from liquid portions of their portfolio. The state has a $12 billion portfolio of investments, and so they're able to take money from Treasury notes or more liquid, you know, investments that are more liquid. They can turn the liquidity and make the investment. So, yeah, there is a cost, but it's not coming out of the general revenue fund.
And one would argue, to the extent that the people who get these loans and now suddenly have financial means are able to go out and spend money, there'd be sales tax collected. So it's, you know, it could be a wash.
And Brian, let's not forget the fact that here's an opportunity. I don't want to call it necessarily a photo op, because there is a program here and there is a need, I'm sure, by some of these people for this money. But from J.B. Pritzker's perspective, from the state treasurer, Michael Frerich's perspective, they also get some publicity and look like they're being proactive here.
They sure do. And Pritzker got to use the name of President Trump a few times in his statement to reporters, which he likes to do to, you know, remind his base that he is going to oppose President Trump. That was a key point of his platform when he was getting elected. And it also allowed Treasurer Frerich to even tee off on former Governor Rauner a little bit. He said that in setting up this program, it was pretty easy to do because he kind of had it on the shelf already. 4 years ago, he said he had looked at something similar when the state was heading into the summer of 2015. The July 1st, the new fiscal year began that month with no budget in place, and there was a real question about whether state workers would have to be working or could get paid. And he said he begun working with banks on a program very much like this at that time. Ultimately, an individual court judge in St. Clair County, Illinois, decreed that state workers had to be paid, and thus, state workers were in fact paid billions of dollars during the resulting two-year budget impasse, which is a key difference between the partial federal government shutdown that's going on now and the partial government shutdown that have plagued Illinois for 2 years, is that federal workers aren't getting paid, and a judge has rejected the legal arguments that unions have made about these workers ought to be paid even in the absence of an appropriation, whereas this one judge in Illinois had approved that order here.
And Pritzker is not quite taking steps quite as radical as some of his Democratic colleagues. The Federal Labor Department has ruled that the workers who are required to report to work, even though they're not getting a paycheck, are not eligible for unemployment benefits. The governors of Michigan, New York, and Washington have asked the Labor Department to waive that rule and let them pay unemployment benefits to those workers who have to go to work. And if they can't, they are urging Trump's Labor Department to go to Congress and change that law. In California, new Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom said, heck with you, Labor Department, I'm going to pay the unemployment benefits to those people anyway.
Well, we mentioned that this gives him, J.B. Pritzker, an opportunity to sort of put a distance between himself and Donald Trump, and also with Bruce Rauner. It, you know, gives him somebody to gives him a message here to be able to tout that, you know, shows he's different. It sets himself apart. And he's done that with some other executive orders this week. Immigration is one of those. Daisy, you are following that as well. This is something that, again, doesn't look like it's going to cost the state a lot of money, I guess, because the money's already been appropriated, at least new money. But this was not being spent, at least according to the Pritzker administration.
Right. As you said, Sean, Pritzker is making somewhat of a clear stand on immigration. He wants to differentiate, set himself apart from President Donald Trump on not just that issue, but other issues as well. A lot of these executive orders are calling on different state agencies to conduct reviews on their practices for several services. So this immigration executive order that you mentioned calls on the Illinois Department of Human Services to conduct a full review of the money appropriations that have been made this year and prior years to so-called welcoming centers. Welcoming centers help immigrants and refugees get the things they need, such as health care, education, mental health, and legal services. So the centers guide immigrants to a path to citizenship. I believe there are about 10 of these welcoming centers in the state, and so that's what the executive order's telling the department to do.
We don't know for sure how much has been spent at this point, right? Or if any has been spent on these.
Yeah, the numbers were not clear. Okay. So that would make the Department of Human Services figure out if it's been money spent accordingly.
Charlie, I wanted to touch base on budgeting just for a second, because people may not understand how state budgeting always works. And that is, money is appropriated, but it doesn't always get spent. So you may think when a budget is passed and some money's in there, everything looks like, okay, well, they're going to do this. It doesn't always work out that way.
No, it's I guess it's pretty confusing to someone who doesn't follow it that closely. There are certain items that if the legislature appropriates the money goes out. For example, the money that goes as general state aid to schools. If the dollars are there, the money is spent, and the governor really doesn't have the ability to stop it. On the other hand, some grant programs, a case in point, a lot of the public works programs, the member initiatives, you know, the pork projects, the appropriation bill will list dozens, hundreds of these projects, and at the bottom will say the money can't be released without the governor's okay. Now, they say it in legal language, but that's what it means. The governor has to allow this money to be used. In the case of state agencies, the governor can just choose, have his department director choose not to spend the money. The flip side is there are some things that get spent even without an appropriation. Probably the main one is the debt service, the money that Illinois has to pay in principal and interest for bonds we've sold. It doesn't matter whether the legislature and the governor appropriate one penny, that money goes out regular as clockwork. So it is confusing, but the governor does have a lot of discretion. The legislature can say, we want this money to be spent for this program, but there's, in many cases, maybe most cases, there's no guarantee that the money actually will be spent.
And Brian, let's look at J.B. Pritzker in, I think was said before, you know, 10, 12 days or whatever since he's been inaugurated. He's not been in office all that long, and yet progressives in the state have probably got to be pretty happy with what they're seeing, because these are the types of issues that he's touching on right off the bat.
He certainly is sort of punching the subject area cards that they would want to see done. I don't I might quibble with the idea that these are really particularly substantive things. I guess if it's, you know, if you are an activist who believes a woman's right to choose is, you know, a very important thing to you, or immigration issues are very important things to you, then this is a big deal. But a lot of these things are, I would say, slightly more symbolic. You know, ordering a review and see, you know, get back to me in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and we'll see how the state's doing. I do think that the Climate Alliance one, that is something that could, you know, it certainly sends a signal of a new orientation from the administration and could have some effects. Although even there they say, well, Illinois is, you know, already seems to be on pace to be doing this because of the surge in investment in solar farms and wind farms that you see from the interstates all over Illinois. But he is certainly, Pritzker wasted no time in sort of reminding Democrats that he is, you know, was elected on what you'd call a progressive message, and he does not seem to be shying away from that at all as he takes office.
And I would like to add, though, I mean, Pritzker has also taken some action on some legislation. So, like last week, the gun licensing regulation bill that was very controversial all last session. And I think, you know, this is a little bit, you know, symbolic, but I think this will actually do some changes.
Well, you mentioned Climate Alliance was mentioned.
Another thing to think about is Pritzker is acting. The legislature has just been around for, what, a couple weeks? They don't really start business until next week. So there is no legislation that he can act on. The gun dealer licensing was left over from last year. There's not any of those other progressive issues out there. So he's kind of indicating, should these issues come to me through the General Assembly, through the legislative process, I will sign those bills.
And he's definitely keeping to his campaign promises of working for the working families of Illinois. So I think, you know, he's establishing that he's keeping to the things that he said. We'll see how he works with the General Assembly, though.
And a lot of these are not spending much money right now, as I mentioned earlier. So maybe it's money that's already been appropriated, things like that. But it's not like new programs that are being launched that are going to, you know, cost the state a bunch of money because, as Brian mentioned, some of these, you know, there might not be a ton of substance behind what he's doing. Now, the Climate Alliance, I did want to mention, because a lot of people, including myself, may not have known exactly what that's all about. And Daisy, can you fill us in on what the governor did this week?
Yeah, so that by signing that executive order, Illinois becomes the 18th state to join the U.S. Climate Alliance. The alliance was created when President Donald Trump withdrew from the Paris Climate Change Agreement 2 years ago. This group, the U.S. Climate Alliance, is a bipartisan group of governors across the country aiming to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 2025. And so there are some issues and some criticism here because Illinois is the fourth leading state in the country for coal production. So some are worried that if the state were to go green, that would affect some jobs in the coal industry. And while this is only a very small percentage on paper, there will be some impact. Pritzker, though, argues that green technology could help mitigate that by creating jobs and stimulating the economy.
Well, would it have much impact, really, on the coal industry, since a lot of our coal is shipped elsewhere anyway? Is it does it really change much as far as, I mean, is there any evidence that this move here is going to hamper the coal industry, which is already, you know, struggles to find a market at times?
I don't think that's very clear, but some are worried that it will.
And I think it depends on how broadly you define the coal industry, right? So I think I looked up the Bureau of Labor Statistics, say there's something like 7,600 people in Illinois employed in mining and activities is how they lump that together. And so that is a 0.1% of the number of people who are employed, the state workforce.
Although the coal interest, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I was just going to say, but then if you count power plants that use coal, such as City Water Light Power or Municipal Electric Utility here in Springfield, and there are other coal-fired power plants across the state, and you look at, you know, the railroad jobs that transport coal. I mean, as you look at the other people who are involved in that industry, who maybe would not be categorized under that group heading under the labor statistics, then you can see broader ripple impacts.
I think coal interests would argue that there's a great number of jobs that could be created if more Illinois coal could be used if we had, and they believe that the technology is there to burn. The problem with Illinois coal is that it's so high in sulfur that it really is much more dangerous in terms of carbon emissions. And I asked Governor Pritzker the other day, one thing he's pushing is for a capital construction plan, billions of dollars of investment in infrastructure at the Climate Alliance. Is there a plan for Illinois coal to invest in technology to be able to use Illinois coal? He said, everything's on the table kind of response.
Well, it occurs to me that maybe a bigger threat to coal than anything else is the explosion. That's probably not the right word, but the vast amount of natural gas that's been made available through fracking. And a lot of power plants are switching from coal to natural gas because it's cleaner burning.
And I think, Brian, you did touch on that Illinois has been a bit more, I wouldn't know if it's a leader necessarily, but it has invested pretty heavily in things like solar and wind technology. It's not as though Illinois is just sitting there waiting for the coal industry to rebound. It's also moved on to some greener ideas as well.
Yeah, and even in the executive order itself, it noted that the state is supposed to be, or at least is on a path to meeting a goal of 25% of its energy coming from renewable sources by the year 2025. That's not very far off. Pritzker says he thinks that the state can get to 100% by 2050. And some of the people I talked to said, we have this investment in solar farms and wind farms, and now there's people even investing here to send the energy elsewhere. It's not even for use in Illinois because it's just viewed as a good place to do that. Anyone who's had to hold onto their hat walking from their car into a store in the middle of winter here in central Illinois might agree that it's a good place for wind energy. But it's also a favorable regulatory environment, and there's other factors that go into people investing in this. And that's what I think Daisy touched on this earlier. Pritzker says, that he thinks that if we can really invest in green technology and sort of try and maybe this idea of, take workforce development more seriously. And that's another executive order he signed in his first week last week, sort of trying to improve vocational training and get people who into these jobs. Maybe if you can't work in a coal mine anymore, you could work building solar panels or something like that.
Before we end this week, and we have a few minutes left here, I did want to mention there was another veterans home resident in the state who passed away after being diagnosed with a positive for Legionnaire's disease, this occurring at the Mantino Veterans Home. And John, you've been following this situation here. I'm sure there are a lot of people are saying, oh no, here we go again, because of what occurred over at Quincy with multiple deaths there. What do we know about the extent of this at Mantino?
That's the response is a reasonable one, particularly because Legionnaires is caused by a bacteria in water, and when you inhale the vapor from that water, you can contract this flu-like illness that is often fatal, and the bacteria, not surprisingly, thrives in old, crusty iron pipes like those at the Quincy home that was constructed, parts of it. It began in 1886. So some of those pipes, some of that plumbing is 50, 60, 70 years old. Mantino, on the other hand, was constructed in 1986. So that's going to be a question that a lot of people are asking. We know that a resident was diagnosed with Legionnaires on January 8th by a local hospital in Kankakee County. I don't know if it was in Mantino. Mantino, of course, is about 50 miles south of Chicago. And the governor went to Mantino on Friday a week ago and signed a series of executive orders because he was highly critical of his predecessor, Bruce Rauner, and his handling of the crisis at Quincy. There was an outbreak in 2015, and it, despite Herculean efforts to eradicate it, it returned in 2016 and in 2017. So far, there have been 14 deaths attributed to Legionnaires at the Quincy home. So Pritzker made this a big issue in the campaign in defeating Rauner, and now he's faced with it as well. He signed executive orders to order an audit of all safety and security precautions by the Veterans Affairs Department, which runs four of these homes in the state, and to determine, you know, are we doing everything we can? And one of the criticisms of the Rauner administration was communication with the public, with residents and their families and staff members at these homes, and he issued an order declaring that, you know, we're going to do all we can to communicate clearly and in a timely manner.
So at this point, John, we're at a point here we don't know really an extent of this. We don't know if you know, if it's present, I guess, in the water supply there and other places. But the governor is at least taking some action here, I guess, trying to get out in front of this. Is he doing enough, I guess, would be the question a lot of people might have.
Well, yeah, one can always ask that, and one can always ask that of the Rauner administration. And the Rauner administration rightfully was defensive when it, you know, with the initial outbreak, there were maybe a dozen cases in August of 2015. And Nirav Shah, the director of public health, testified before legislative committees. And one can understand his inability to understand why, you know, people couldn't appreciate the efforts they made. They took, they followed the directions of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They put filters on faucets. They flushed the water out more frequently. They put in a $5 million water treatment plant. In those initial days, he kept talking about, we turned the tide. We had 12 cases immediately, and yes, people died, but we took all these actions, and we only had a minimal number of cases after that. Of course, that's not great comfort to family members who lose a loved one, or to legislators who have to answer to the public. Rauner, I think, you know, Rauner spent a lot of time frustrated that we did everything we were told to do by the experts in this field in illness prevention, and it wasn't enough. And so Pritzker, you know, is walking a tightrope too.
Well, I think part of the problem for the Rauner administration was that WBEZ, the public radio station in Chicago, through Freedom of Information requests, got a whole bunch of emails in which the Rauner administration, some of the people in the governor's inner circle, seem more concerned about how can we massage this for PR purposes rather than what some people would say should have been the immediate concern, trying to notify people, trying to get to the bottom of the situation.
We'll continue to follow this case and also what's going on in Manteno over the next several months as well. That will do it for this week, and you can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. Members of the broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Daisy Contreras, and John O'Connor. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.